Allie.
That's okay.
Welcome to Unrolled with Kate, Frankie, and Ryan.
Can you hear me, Major Tom? Can you hear me, Major Tom? No, don't touch that button. Oh, Ryan.
We did not in any way discuss what we were supposed to be talking about.
It's fine, because there's enough to talk about already.
There is.
So I hope everybody out there has everything they need right now and is as okay as you can be right now. Mama, I just want to start with that. You are a monkey. I know. I just want to start by saying, I think on some planet, I thought this would be a dream, you know, like when I think about my Sankalpa.
God, pardon me. I have to go. I have to go now.
No, kidding. I often thought about like just being left alone. It'd be beautiful. Finally get some quiet time. And yeah, it's not quite what I thought.
Yeah. I feel like I was on the phone at some ungodly hour of the evening last night with a good friend out in San Francisco. And I was like, yeah, I feel like I'm doing more work than I would normally be doing. You know, not in a like, I've got a like an urge to be productive, but just in like an urge to make enough money to pay the bills. And he was like, you know that that's like not a thing that people are doing right now, right?
is interesting, yeah.
So it's,
because of the nature of our work, have more than I have previously.
Yes. And we've taken the commute out of the yoga equation. Which leaves more time for more things. And and it's great, and I'm grateful for the work, and it's imperfect work. And it is not really up to my standards.
Untouchable and unspeakable standards.
And if the name of the game is just trying to do what we need to do to get to survive this, both in a livelihood sort of way and in a helping people sort of way, then I'm okay with it being moderately imperfect.
Ryan, can you hear me, Ryan?
I can hear you, Frankie.
Can you?
Yes, Ryan can hear you, baby. Imperfection is the name of the game, and I'm trying to find joy in that, like lowering the standards and doing what you can and like being empowered and excited about the fact that in so many areas of our lives, we have the opportunity to start again and to be new and to build things the way we want them. Like we on both the micro and the meta level, there is opportunity for that. If we can escape the crushing existential crisis or, you know, abiding depression and anxiety that this exacerbates.
Yes.
So just wanted to say that I'm trying to not see the silver lining, but the reality is in destruction is the space for creation.
And there's
go ahead.
There's also something about the I've been really conscious of, and I don't really have an answer for it necessarily, but when the momentum of everything that's when the momentum of everything in terms of, you know, we gotta get this up and running or that up and running, or I'm gonna put a new class there, or I'm gonna do this or I'm gonna do that, collides with the overall anxiety and existential dread. And then there is this deep samskara, for lack of a better word, of just push through, Ryan. Just push through. Like it was
muscle
any,
it.
Like it was any other situation. And I think we've maybe, I've been in conversations where I've become acutely aware that all parties have forgotten the context of what's actually happening.
Right.
And that's really an interesting sensation to sort of have that moment of being able to step back and be like, oh, there's a fucking global pandemic. And we're talking about how to keep business going.
Uh-huh.
And I know. You know, both of those things can obviously exist at the same time, but one can't get lost for the other.
I think holding that thought, and like, you know, on the personal level, there's so many people I'm talking to that are struggling with, I'm sorry that my computer's moving around. I know it's dizzifying. There's so many people that are like dealing with mental health stuff. And I was like having a conversation with my therapist, and she was like, she had to remind me a couple times. She was like, look at the context with which you're feeling what you're feeling, like, and doing how you're doing, you know, like, just as a reminder, backdrop is not what it usually is.
Yeah.
It's hot. Baby, you might want to blow on it. Yeah. Put it on the plate and let it rest. So I have retreated back into some of the skills that I learned in early sobriety. The good news is they're not all working. But it is funny, like, how your brain can so quickly normalize the backdrop, and how quickly the mind, for me at least, is quick to be like, do better, do more.
Yeah.
You're better than this. You can be better than this. And I'm like, I don't know that that's helpful right now, mind. I don't know that I want to get better at this.
Yeah.
I think it's okay to like not be optimized for progress and growth and brand building during a pandemic, you know? Like, so many people are like, this is a great opportunity. And I'm like, of course there's opportunity and destruction. And yet.
And of course there's opportunity to be helpful. Especially given the skill set that we have.
Yes.
It's just sometimes sometimes when I have brought up that view in conversation with folks, there is this inability to hold multiple things at the same time, which I totally understand, but, and we can work from the backdrop of trying to be helpful and include within that the truth of needing to understand that people are depending on certain things for livelihood and have certain, you know, financial like sort of base needs that need to be met. And there's no way that those two things can't be held at the same time. And there's no way that those shouldn't be held at the same time, because whatever we do to get through this emotionally, psychologically, physically, in terms of how we live our lives in the world and make a living, chances are whatever we figure out is not going to last. Like it the whole paradigm will shift again
when we return.
If we return, depending on how we return, there's just no way to anticipate what that is going to look like. So it's just a...
I mean, I'm anticipating a hybrid.
Well, yes. I mean, there are things like that that can be anticipated for sure. And I agree that there will be some sort of hybrid model, which I think could be good for the overall landscape of teaching and yoga, et cetera. You know, beyond anticipating that, like, you know, I know people that have talked to me about like moving, have like started plans to move back home, or at least to areas that are closer to home, where they know that they can get a job that, you know, is less work, pays the same amount as they make in Boston.
Yes.
But they could buy a house, you know?
I have that moment all the time where I am so grateful that I had the courage to move.
Yeah.
To freaking East Providence, Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And like, I sit in this apartment that is so much larger than my one bedroom and is almost half the price. And if I had been in Boston during this, I would be in a very different type of trouble with, you know, like raising a daughter. It would have been really, really hard. And it's like, I don't want to have like a call to action of like, get the hell out of the city, but also get the hell out of the city, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's just very interesting to have. And this is kind of what I appreciate. And this is what I appreciate in those conversations is you know, you can tell when you're having these conversations that people, you know, really, what's the word I'm looking for? This is real deep reflection on what's important to them. And, you know, it's not coming in most cases from some sort of like panicked place. There's like a real, there's like a real calm of like, no, I think this is the right decision. And they've thought, and in some cases prayed over it. And, there is something refreshing about that being able to have that type of conversation with people. Some of whom I have never really like had that type of sort of deeper conversation with. So it's very, very interesting. And in some ways, I do hope that that level of connection and understanding of how we can...
The veil is thin.
Yeah.
It ain't staying thin. It's soon as... I mean, I don't know the exact timeline on it, but I also know that you know, the way the mind works. And people, it's almost like the whole world has had three glasses of wine in terms of like emotional vulnerability and communicating on what.
Yeah.
So for our listeners, as you can guess, we have Frankie with us today. This is a new reality. And I think about like what this is doing.
Hi, Ryan.
Can you say hi? Yeah. Ryan says hi. Yeah. I don't know where I was going with that thought. Can we talk about food and weight for a second? Ooh, a cardinal.
We certainly can.
So, I am someone who, during times of crisis, if food is a resource, I will eat it. Like I am, I'm a comfort eater. You know, food at times has been an anchor, and I've used it in unproductive ways. But as a survival skill, it's in some ways it's done me right. You know, it's been. But you know, I've been working on developing other tools besides, you know, food and drugs and alcohol to feel better. But at this particular time, food right now is, has been my drug of choice. And I'm being vulnerable for a minute. I at once am deeply body positive and size positive. And but I also am like pro not feeling like you need something external to feel, to like self-regulate, you know?
Yeah.
And food is always so complicated because it's not, you want a little more? You got it. Food is not something that you can just like omit. There's a simplicity to alcoholism. It's like, just don't.
just don't.
Just stop. And
well, and then in a certain respect, you know, food is self-regulating.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Situation.
but I bring it up because you can use it. Like you can need more self-regulating than your body can process.
Yes.
You know, and I have felt, just as a side note for anybody that's worried, I'm about to veer into like diet culture. I'm not. I have felt more beautiful than I have in years, even though I'm larger than I've been in a while. I have rounded the corner in a different way of celebrating my body and who I am and what I look like. That being said, it's challenging to be at home surrounded by food as nourishment and food as drug.
Yeah.
And food is comfort and food is joy. And I don't think anybody has it figured out.
No.
I really don't. You know, I'm a huge advocate and participant in the healthy at every size community. And I just am, for the topic, bringing up the fact that this situation can be triggering for anybody and everybody on both ends of the spectrum. I know people that are like restricting and people that are overeating and falling into old patterns that were once sort of, Frankie is literally covered in maple syrup. I don't know how it happened. Okay. Thanks, baby. We're all done with that. she's a freaking, okay. No, hands off the computer. So I don't know. All right, let's go do that right now. Okay, you got to keep this down though. Okay, we're just going to take a little walk to the other room with my little pancake baby. So yeah, I just, You talk before I keep saying things that might offend or trigger people.
I don't know that I have anything that would not also offend or trigger people. Though I definitely fall more into the restricting side of the equation in times of stress and general existential angst. I don't know how much I want to delve into all this, but I've recognized some of the habits that in normal life have to both have their intelligence and their sort of neurotic qualities. Like the fact that I walk everywhere is both a for our listeners, I'm looking at a screen with Frankie climbing all over Kate covered in maple syrup, which is why it's hard to complete a thought on this. But so there are habits in the everyday life sans pandemic that both have their intelligent qualities to them, like the fact that I get to walk from studio to studio every day and use that as a buffer between teaching and work and all of that. And I would be lying if I said that there wasn't some sort of weight and what's the word I'm looking for? Echo of disordered eating and body dysmorphia that is satiating in terms of being like, oh, okay, well, you did a lot of things today.
You walked 5 miles.
Exactly. And so it's really difficult to not do that. Sort of sit with the feelings around, all of the fucking memes about whether you're going to lose weight or gain weight during the pandemic is just infuriating either way.
I really appreciate the companies that have been doing like, hey, just try to hold steady. Like you don't have to use this to gain or lose. Like just, try to take care of yourself, whatever that means. I like that messaging better than the, it's so hateful, the memes. They're also like, it's not, like if you do gain weight, it's like not the end of the fucking world,
Totally, totally. Well, and then there's all like, I guess I can delve into this. Like I've been sort of exploring and testing around with different combinations of HRT hormone replacement therapy, and like the number one thing on like all of the warning lists is like you're gonna gain weight, and it's like not necessarily true. Your body composition will change, and so on some technical level, weight might be, you feel different, but one of the things that had caused me to take a little bit of a break from exploring that is it really pointed out how much dysmorphia was and is like a reality in my psyche. And the idea of trying to deal with the truth of that in the pandemic, plus the truth of like potential body modification during the pandemic. It was just like, and then teaching yoga.
Go hold some space, Ryan.
Like, and then having your like, emotional wiring like tweaked It just was like, okay, we can't, we have to hold, we have to press pause. You don't have adequate support to explore this right now. And the, you know, no like clear conclusions were made during that month and a half of testing things out, because it was totally overwhelmed by the context of what was going on. Mm-hmm. And but it was really fascinating to see that like deeply ingrained habit and feeling about myself like rear its ugly head in a way that it hadn't done since, or in a way that I had maybe like squashed it down or sort of reasoned it away, you know, since being a teenager.
Ryan, I don't really know one yoga teacher that I could say with confidence from the back seat, from the armchair, doesn't have a fucking eating disorder. and before people freak out at me, I'm sure
which would include any sort of exercise bulimia variant.
Orthorexia. That's the big one. Orthorexia.
Yeah.
And for those of you that are unfamiliar with orthorexia, it is an eating disorder that centers around the illusion of health being only achievable and sustainable if you're doing the following things. It usually results in, you know, your body just kind of falling apart because you're working out so much and because you're eating things that you perceive to be healthy foods. You can only eat healthy foods to the detriment of your mental health. And that is something that it has just like washed over a generation of fitness and wellness instructors. Like, yeah. It's breathtaking. Anyways, I say this because I'm sure there's tons of people that have a healthy, balanced, and non-pathological relationship with food. I'm sure you're out there, but I'm just saying. I'm gonna step back for a second and say, I think there's a lot of people that are struggling with this issue in the yoga community, and I appreciate. When people talk about it out loud. And I think it's especially important to talk about how it tends to lean towards, you know, orthorexia or restriction, because the result of that is something that our culture lauds aesthetically. You know, a skinny and even seeing like, you know, and so students come sometimes at the altar of thinness, practicing with a teacher, you know, as an aspirational quality to be around that teacher, because look at the results that their practice has yielded on their body.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to remember that it's not necessarily the practice that did that to their body.
Yeah.
And so unweaving those two things, is difficult.
And then having to get in front of a Zoom camera and see yourself reflected through the Zoom lens, which is its own dysmorphic.
Oh, totally. I've had a couple of moments though, where I'm like, this is such a great opportunity. Like I'm in my home, and here's my belly, and I'm practicing more in front of students than I ever have. I normally don't at all. Like very rarely in any class am I demoing, like, you know, once in a while. But so I'm demoing more than I ever have. And I am like, wow, I think I'm bigger than I've been in a really long time. Definitely squishier. Okay, now's an opportunity to talk about how to move the flesh. I can do that here. And I can practice like not being ashamed, because the truth is I'm not. I think I have a beautiful body when it grows and when it shrinks, and I have a place that the body changes. It just changes throughout our life. So I think trying to pause and love what you have.
That's kind of the interesting thing, is like it's never been. And this is just my experience, so I don't know if this is reflective of anyone else's experience. It's not this like constant.
The body is not arrival. It is stasis.
But it's the experience of having these moments of like dread around your body changing, or you know, whether it's because of weight or whether it's because of age. It's not this like constant thread of like, oh my God, I hate my body. I hate my body. There are absolutely moments where I like fucking love the way that I look. And then there are moments where I'm like, for whatever reason, whether it's my, you know, the shit that has been drilled into me about what, and all of us about what a man and what a woman and what someone who's androgynous is supposed to look like, or, you know, whether it's because I put on weight or lost weight, or like what, all of these ideas that are sort of swirling around in our head about what our body is supposed to be and how it's supposed to look and you know, how we're supposed to feel in it and all of these, it's not this constant. It's this like, it's the from Good Place, it's the Jeremy Bear Me squiggle. That best represents my feeling about my own body.
The body, yeah. The body, and I think maybe sometimes at its core, the desire to have like a set weight is in some ways a desire to cease or to pause or freeze time.
Yeah.
Because, and I think, so this is interesting to me at least. Sometimes when I am in a shape, or when I was just starting out with yoga, I'd come into a shape and I'd realize, oh my God, it's changing. The shape is changing because I'm breathing. I'm supposed to be holding still. Like this Parvrita Trikonasana is changing. I can't hold still. And I thought I was doing it wrong. Like I hadn't found the right place where I could lock it down. And then I realized, oh, it changes as you breathe. It's supposed to, because you're fucking breathing, you know? And so now I celebrate, like construct the shape creatively, arrive in it. And then as you arrive, feel how it evolves, feel how it changes. It gets bigger and smaller. Yeah. It shifts, and like feel the shifts and ride the shifts. And like to apply that logic to the body, like, ooh, it's changing. Oh, my body is getting bigger and softer right now. Isn't that interesting? It's happening because I need to feel grounded on this planet. It's happening because they feel deep, deep stress and fear. So thank you, body, for responding, you know, and telling me to anchor back to the planet. You know, I'm not saying that like it's just like, this is a time to just observe with compassion what is happening and why.
Yeah.
And don't try to lock. I can't lock it down because that's the illusion of control anyways.
That we don't.
We don't have. And I find that when I can regulate my nervous system and feel less fear of life-threatening loss, or the way I describe it sometimes is, I feel like the cops are about to find me and I've done something terrible. That's sort of my nervous system state right now is, I did something fucked up and the cops are gonna find me. When I can get out of that place, my relationship with food shifts.
I agree. Not only my relationship with food, but my relationship to how I feel about my body in general, and not in a sort of like triumphant narrative, like, oh, look what I can do with this body. It's more like the things are more in sync. You know, it's not, you know, hopefully there's also a feeling of the physical body being in slightly less discomfort or slightly less pain if there's a pain pattern going on. But it's also this like if the mind is in a place of sort of self-criticism, especially pointed at the body or pointed at how you're doing emotionally or, you know, whatever it is, if there is the facility to bring some regulation to the nervous system, I do find that it doesn't solve anything necessarily, but it does. There's a momentary okayness that everything is just, it feels more integrated. And
okayness,
that can go away really, really quickly.
Also, like, it's interesting, like, the sense of okayness is also a moving target. Like, so
yes,
knowing that okayness for somebody that struggles with something might actually not be okay, like,
yes, you know,
in terms absolutely of like your health and wellness. But it's a moving target, and it should be.
Yes. And sometimes, and you know, my teacher actually sort of gently reminded me that, you know, having the forethought and intentionality to decide that doing yoga asana or sitting on your cushion is not the right tool is in itself an expression of practice.
Yes, having, I love that.
The forethought and the intention to be like, wow, there's some emotional fucking shit going on right now, and I don't think that I can really be still right now. So let me go take a walk, or let me go call a friend, or let me go, even like fucking manically cleaning the house because there's literally nothing else to do, which was a tactic that I took the other day.
I need that. I wish I can that.
It only happens like once every 2 weeks. So you'd have to have me at just the right time. that is in and of itself an expression of practice. So I and especially when it's you know, for me, it's always this like, okay, can I, whatever the pitch of the suffering is, can I get it to just turn down enough that I can get back to the mat or the cushion, because there's enough trust that work is useful. That is often the intention of expressing practice in another way. It's like, okay, this is too much for me to handle in any given moment. So let me go do something that just brings the pitch down enough that I can sit, that I can lie over a bolster, that I can do what is helpful. And that process has to look different for everybody, which is fundamentally why teaching yoga is challenging to do en masse. Because what okayness, what wellness looks like for me is different than what it looks like for you is different than what it looks like for anybody else, because the context is different. Your history, your experiences, your trauma, your like is different than the way that mine expresses, and therefore the yoga has to be different. And is different just from an experiential way. There's no way for me to know that if we were in the same exact posture doing it the same exact way, that there wouldn't be a vastly different, and there would be, I imagine, a vastly different description of sensation, description of thought, description of what was being felt emotionally. And then if we did it 10 seconds later, it would be different again. End rant.
It was a beautiful rant. And every day, I say to myself, do the next right thing, which is often something super basic. Like,
yeah,
did you make your bed?
Mine did you go sloppily made as I look over?
Did you make time for like a 5-minute shower? Like,
yeah.
You're just like Irish up the pits and crotch and the hair. And is your daughter loved and fed and amused enough? Did you read a couple books?
I imagine that Frankie is quite amused most of the time.
I love spending this time with her. This is like what I want. I always kind of wanted to like homeschool, and homeschool is a very fluid thing. Homeschooling is fluid. And that's what I want to say to, like, you know, the people with kids that are older that are following this curriculum. Like, the curriculum's great, but like, kids right now just need to like learn what they're interested in.
I've,
and like, we're in a freaking pandemic. Like, let's learn about that with the kids. Let's work on self-regulation of the nervous system with the kids, like self-care with the kids, you know?
Well, I've also talked to a number of folks with kids who are saying, like, who have kids that normally really struggle in the school environment and are like thriving.
Exactly.
Because they're learning what they want to learn. They're reading what they want to read. They're like, and so that's very, very interesting to me. I mean, obviously it's not without its challenges to be at home with the kid, but in terms of like that very, very specific aspect of learning and staying sort of intellectually and creatively engaged, that they're shocked at the shift in well-being, which I think is pretty cool to hear. That's one of the things that I think will be really interesting to see if education just in general is totally disrupted, overhauled,
reimagined, and
yeah.
You know, in a lot of ways, the school system is there as childcare while people go to work, you know, and the amount of curriculum covered in the average day is, I am a kid, kind of. And you're a boy? Cool.
Getting real deep today.
You're whatever you want, baby. As long as you're fed and happy, I'm good. So the rush to keep up with something that is shifting, I don't know either. All I know is that I'm like, I was in CVS picking up soda and some medications, and in there with my mask, and everybody's got really stylish masks now. You notice this?
Yes.
And it's just, I have always felt at home in CVS and Walgreens and convenience stores. There's just, one of my first poems I wrote was about that. It was about wandering. It was actually like, I was still in active, I was still using, and I wrote a poem about the comfort of wandering the fluorescent lights of a convenience store and how the sameness of it is what felt like salvation.
Yeah.
The familiarity of brands and the at times affordability and the friendly accessibility.
Yeah.
It just felt like a church of consumption in a way that cradled me. All my needs can be met here. Yeah. So I, you know, those split, you know, those short voyages I get to take into stores are I treasure. And also it feels like I'm on another planet, you know. We were walking on the bike path in Rhode Island. There's an amazing bike path. It really pretty much goes the whole state. And it's like right next to the ocean. Wow. And so I was walking through the one that goes through Providence to East Providence. And I have Frankie in this little bike thing that has a stick so that I can direct where she's going. But she has the illusion of freedom. So we were walking in that, and I could not believe the volume of people out, because you're still allowed to be on that.
Yeah.
We closed everything else, every other park, but you can travel on that. And it's just interesting to see how, you know, bikers at the end of the day are still assholes. They're still total jerks. Like, it doesn't matter. It's a pandemic. If you're send me the email. Send me the angry email, bikers. Are you muted? I can't hear you.
No, I'm not muted.
Oh, okay.
I'm here.
Yeah, bikers, what the hell is it? It's just like the fucking unflappable entitlement of like that aerodynamic helmet. It does something to your brain. Anyways, it's probably because Frankie and I don't know what side to be on and we're insufferable. But
well, up here in Somerville, it's still the people congregating on the street.
What?
Like, it, you know. That just drives me insane. And like, you can see that it's like increasingly grating on other people's nerves too, because everyone's like now trying to like weave, like run across the street and then run back because there's like six people meeting up on the sidewalk. And you know, it's fine to like, in my mind, to stand 6 feet away from someone and just like, hi, I hope you're okay. Like, but maybe not like linger with the conversation. Just like say hello, move on. And then if you want to have a conversation, then let's do that digitally. but yeah, that's been really annoying walking around, because I do try to go for a walk every day, and it just, I've gotten better about finding those little side streets where people are less likely to congregate, but there's no way to like avoid Somerville Avenue. And like people will, the other day I walked by and there were six people who just set out like lawn chairs around the front door of someone's house, like in the middle of the sidewalk, and were drinking. And I was just like, what the fuck?
Did you say anything?
I didn't, no. But yeah, people are weird. Yeah, life's weird.
Life's weird. All right. Tips. Any new tips you've discovered?
I have not discovered any new tips this week.
Okay, so then things I'm focusing on. Drinking more water and telling other people to drink water.
Yelling at other people to drink water.
Drink water. So drinking water is one.
I'm just focusing on getting through the week.
Here's another tip. Fall asleep to Rachel Maddow.
I don't know how you can do that.
It's awful. I don't know what's wrong with me. Tip number three, if you can, treat yourself. if you can treat yourself, do it with something independently owned, minority owned company. Get yourself a treat. I did with one of my favorite herbalists, Plants and Provisions, has finally put up some fucking products. So I was able to buy, and she forages locally in like Arlington and Cambridge and Medford, and makes medicinal plants that are fucking great. So just, you know, I don't have advice. The only advice, I just drink water. You're not alone. Whatever you are struggling with, whatever demon has arisen from the dark isolation of this chapter of our collective, you are not alone.
Yes. I've got nothing. I've got nothing. Okay. Ready?
Here we go. Bye.
Bye.